G'day, Groovers, it's Harps, it's you, it's me, it's Melissa, it's Dr. Jody, it's life, it's Monday, I'm fucking excited. Hi, Melissa.
Hello, how's it going?
Look, it's going pretty good on my end because I'm a technical genius, unlike you two bozos who couldn't figure out either of you. One of you, Dr. Jody, camera wouldn't work, so all we heard was noise. And Melissa, camera worked, but no audio. Melissa, what is going on at TYPHQ? Have you got a new gadget?
I got a new boom arm on the weekend, which is quite exciting. I've been wanting to get it for a while, so now I can kind of move my arms freely.
Now, but 70% of people are going, what is a boom arm?
Like an arm that you can swing the microphone on kind of thing. You can swing it and change where it's positioned.
Right.
So like in a studio, you've got them on the studio arm, one of those kind of things. But the thread, long story, but yeah, the thread inside, the part that connects is actually a bit dodgy. I'm getting it replaced. And so I'm just hoping that the mic doesn't like fall off during today's ep.
Or as I would say, shit itself. But what is funny is you often, when we start before anyone's on and we're not rolling and our guest hasn't arrived because I'm a fucking 14-year-old, I pretend I can't hear you and then you just keep talking and fucking with things. But today, like the boy who cried wolf, I actually couldn't hear you. And then sometimes because this room I'm in is pretty soundproof, I just move my lips and you're like, your mic's not working. So yeah, I keep moving my lips. But today... Today it was real.
You really are like a 12-year-old, aren't you?
I know. Like, I don't know how people can, like a job without fun to me is, I don't know. I actually think in the midst of some intelligence and wisdom, I say some, I think I'm quite immature because I still laugh at shit that nobody
that,
else
though.
Laughs at my what?
I love that though. You have
I find ridiculous stuff funny. Anyway, and Dr. Jody's doing something.
I think she's plugging headphones in.
Oh, I think she's plugging headphones in.
Yeah.
She's just
poor Dr. Jody. Tech has not been kind to her this morning.
Can you hear us, Doc?
Oh yeah, I heard every word. I just thought that it would be, you know, especially, you know, when it comes to audio quality, it would be so much nicer if I put my headphones in. So
awesome.
I'm all set.
All right. How are you?
I'm good. I am loving having the house to myself, loving having the kids back at school. One of our kids had a serious bike accident and ended up being, we had to go to hospital and we had to have a few days in hospital. And he ended up having a couple of weeks off. Beginning the very day school went back. I'm like, if you just wanted a day off, you just had to ask. So kids are back and I'm getting, it's just nice to have a bit of time to yourself. That's what I'm finding. Yeah.
Good. Is he okay?
He is great. He had a lacerated liver.
Oh, wow.
So very serious. Yeah, I know, right?
What was he doing?
He was mountain biking and they do some pretty serious jumps. He's 13 and he has come home cut and bruised and various, you know, injuries from the mountain bike, you know, the track and the jumps and the things that he does with his mates and doesn't really complain much about any of that. It's all just par for the course. But when you get a phone call from your son's friend who says they've had a stack, he was dazed, can you come and help? What that basically means is they haven't got up. And this was on the back of 2 weeks before that. His friend had had an accident and the friend had been at our school doing our home doing homeschool. And so the boys took off on their bikes at lunchtime and I got the phone call, a similar phone call saying he's had a stack. He won't get up. So he had a fractured wrist and our son had a grade 3 liver laceration. He was just in the most excruciating abdominal pain. So, you know, you go to ED with a kid and you want to go straight through. You don't want to sit and wait. But when you go there and they actually send you straight through, you kind of go, oh, shit. Oh, my God. Like, I knew this could be serious, but, you know, what the hell's wrong? So it was, it was pretty stressful. But I cope really well in these situations. I just have a good cry. You know, a day or two or three afterwards when I've got some privacy because I stayed at the hospital all that time. So I couldn't really kind of express how I felt. But yeah, he's back to sport, back to school, and not back to bike riding, not yet.
Isn't it interesting how stressed and anxious and worried, or as my beautiful mother would say, flustered, flustered. That's what Mary says when people get, she says, flustered or hot and bothered. Oh, hot the woman bothered. Was all, my mum says, the woman was all hot and bothered. I think that means a bit grumpy or stressed. But isn't it funny how, or understandable, I guess, when it's our kid, we're like 9 out of 10 stressed or maybe in the moment, but in terms of internally, we're like, fuckity fuck. But when it's us, we're like, it's all good, everyone. Calm down. I'm fine. You know, because it's, I think there's that, you know, when it's your child or when it's someone that you love, child or partner or whoever, and you literally have no control over what the outcome's going to be, it's a very vulnerable place, right?
Very, very. And I'm an optimistic person, and I knew he was, I like to look at him, like his helmet was broken. He was glassy-eyed. He couldn't remember everything about the incident. He had superficial wounds from his head to his cheek to his shoulder, all down his right side. He was filthy. And but when they did the ultrasound, the doctor cut his T-shirt off. It was full on, you know, he was a trauma patient. And the doctor cut his T-shirt off and did an internal ultrasound, an ultrasound of his internal organs to determine if there was internal bleeding. And there wasn't. And I was like, oh, thank God, like this is good. And, you know, we had a laugh. You're not pregnant, ha ha. And good to know. And the doctor said, no, I'm sending him for a CT. But I was feeling like, oh, okay, you know, right, he's going to have a few bumps and bruises. And the doctor said, I predict that he will have a liver laceration. He said, I've seen this so many times, knowing the pain, knowing the location, despite the fact that there's no internal bleeding. He said, this is what I'm predicting. And I was thinking, nah, surely not. Yeah, so it was quite a shock. Yeah.
What do you know, doctor?
What do I know? What do I know? Wishful thinking it was. We were beautifully looked after, Frankston ED, and then by ambulance about 5 o'clock the next morning to the Monash Children's, but not with lights and sirens, just a safe transport. And, we were
How do they treat a lacerated liver?
They do nothing. If it's- Yeah,
that's what I thought. Doesn't it repair itself? Mm. Like as in- Even if you lose a bit of your liver, I'm thinking of some bloody
reptile. No, you're right.
Doesn't it grow back some of it?
Yeah, the liver is an extraordinary organ, I've learned. And if you're going to have this sort of an injury, the liver can heal itself beautifully. We were put on the surgical ward at Monash and he was considered for surgery, but they avoid that if they possibly can. And so he was on bed rest. We had bruised kidney and adrenal glands, interestingly. They were all bruised, but very, very lucky to not have anything more serious. And so it was essentially don't move from bed for a couple of days. And then he started to get some privileges. You're allowed to go for a little walk around the ward and just let pain be the guide and let it heal itself. So we're very, very thankful for that.
Now, for those of you who don't know whose voice this is, of course, it's Dr. Jodie Richardson, alumni of the U Project and, of course, internationally renowned host of the Well Hello Anxiety show, the Well Hello Anxiety podcast. And so if you're all about anxiety and how to reduce it and manage it and live with it and understand it, Well Hello Anxiety is the one-stop pit stop for all of that. Now, before you started Well Hello Anxiety, you and I had a few talks and you're a bit hesitant because you've been very clear that you yourself have had a life of anxiety and peaks and troughs and navigating, and although you work with people in this space, you still have your own challenges, as do I, with a plethora of issues. Please call me later. And I remember you because I'm the opposite of a perfectionist with some, that's not really true, is it, Melissa?
It depends on the field.
I'm a bit of a contradiction.
Yeah, depends on the field. Like with your email account, you're not worried about how many emails are open or not.
I don't give a fuck.
But with the diary, you want things to be right.
Yeah. There's some things. What do you reckon that is? Because it's like with the conversations that I have, like this one we're having now, for me, the less planning, the better. But at the same time, I still really care about the end product and the look and feel. You know, with every product or service or program, there's a look and feel, there's an energy, there's a vibe, there's a how is this perceived by our audience or our customer or our whatever it is we're talking about. And I'm very relaxed with this bit because I think I'm better when, and I think it's a better listening experience when I have no plan and I'm just fully present. How are you going now? Because you're quite a few episodes in, you're ranking, you're rating, your audience is growing. Has the anxiety subsided? Are you still over the top with your prep and your perfectionism, or what's going on?
Oh, the anxiety has reduced phenomenally. I was so, we talked about it, of course, and you called me out, and I copped that because I needed a little bit of. Oh, I guess I felt at some stages I was so anxious. If I hadn't said anything publicly about it, I was thinking of how can I backpedal out of this, which is what anxiety does. You know, we don't like it. It feels so overwhelming. And podcasting, you know, there are some things that you can do that are overwhelm you with anxiety or build the anxiety. And that, you know, my motto is feel anxious and do it anyway. So I knew I would never turn my back on it. It was something that was really important, but it's a big deal to do a podcast because you're putting yourself out there and it's accessible for anyone and you're open. And I knew I'd be opening the door to making a meaningful difference in people's lives, but also opening yourself up to perhaps criticism as well as praise and good feedback. And I had an awareness of that going into it. And so I was dragging my feet, but I still felt like I was moving forward. And just to reach out to people and say, you know, I'd love you to be a guest. This is why I love your work. And this is what I'd love to talk to you about. Are you interested? And to have, again, that anxiety, somebody might say no. And yeah, that's happened. And you know what? That was okay. I'm like, no problem. Thanks anyway. All the best and move on to the next, you know, invitations. So the preparation, the planning, I've followed in your footsteps in the sense that, you know, you once said to me, if you're going to have a coffee with someone, you wouldn't take notes and write down 10 questions you're going to ask them. You'll welcome, you know, you'll greet them, you'll say good day, and you'll open a conversation. And I think that that approach has really served me well. And I end up having conversations with people that go in directions that I think that perhaps they might not have been taken in before, because it's not the stock standard kind of key questions that I want to ask. I'll just build on something that they've shared with me. And guests often say, I really enjoyed that, because, you know, some of the guests that no doubt you talk to and that I've been talking to have been a podcast guest many times before. And we both know that some of those experiences are so enriching and you just feel fantastic. And other times you sort of feel like it's the Spanish Inquisition. So I really felt that advice has served me well. And the feedback I'm getting, you know, one woman wrote to me and she said she's listened to every episode twice and that it's just empowering her to support her own voice, but also herself. Mm. And yeah, I read those reviews or emails people send me, and no doubt you do too. And you just think, man, this is fantastic, because this is what I was hoping for. And yeah, it's making a difference. So I'm actually really enjoying it now. I know I'm talking quite a bit in this answer, but that my this week's episode, this Wednesday, I think it's the 7th of, I best check the date. This coming episode this week is about suicide, and I interviewed Danielle Miller, and it's about education and understanding and responding, and about first becoming a first aider. And it was a discussion that I was anxious to go into. I was tiptoeing around it because it's such a sensitive subject, but the way she talks about it with such conviction and compassion, and she's not afraid to say the word, and she knows so much about it, from why it happens to what questions we can ask, to do we, if we mention it, are we going to put an idea in someone's head, to where do we get help? Where do we get help for someone? How do we connect and redirect? and how can we get more training and all the myths. And even on a topic like that where I was a bit like, oh, I want to get this right, my guest just sort of took me through it, and it was just, yeah, it was a great experience. Even on a topic like that, it's feeling like a really good gift that I'm creating each week. So
good for you, Doc. I think quite often, and that sounds like a fascinating conversation, I think sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes the conversations we need to have, or the best conversations on a podcast or off a podcast, are the ones that are hard.
Mm.
You know, the ones that I don't really want to have this conversation, but I need to, or they need to, or we need to, or I've been on episodes, you know, like we are now in real time recording, and I think of a question or something slides into my head, an idea or a topic, and I think, oh, I don't really want to ask this because it's not a comfortable door to open, but I also think it might be a valuable door to open for people. And so I just go with it, you know, and I think that, you know, that's part of helping people is being, you know, like talking about suicide is rough, talking about, you know, people who are really struggling with mental health. Sometimes it's tough because you don't know what to say, and people who are, you know, ruminating and obsessing potentially about ending their own lives, and you know, and domestic violence and, you know, abuse and, you know, discrimination. There are so many hard conversations that it's much easier to avoid them in the moment, but we don't really grow or progress as people with those things anyway, unless we're going, all right, well, this is not easy, but this is what's going on. You know, this is, people are killing themselves. And we could maybe find a more comfortable way to say that, but that's the truth. People are killing themselves. People are thinking about that. People are hurting other people. People are abusing people. Like there is lots of horrible shit going on, and us not talking about things and not addressing things and not opening the door for people who are hurting to come in and share and feel safe and listen to you and people like you, perhaps, to be either inspired or educated or informed. You know, by not doing those things, you know, and avoiding it, we're not doing any good. And, you know, sometimes it's like the no pain, no gain. It's like it's so broadly relevant for so many things, you know. So I'm glad you're doing that. I wanted to ask why I remember when, I don't want to bang on about this, but it's just relevant for what we're talking about. So when my training partner, for those who are new to the show, my training partner died momentarily. I will quickly add, my training partner died momentarily 2 years ago, around about this time, a few weeks ago, I think the anniversary was, for 17 minutes, he was offline. And I just remember in that moment being like almost abnormally calm, Jody, and abnormally in control, and no feeling of stress, just clarity and calmness and focus, immense focus on what I needed to do. And even that, and then the Ambos got there about 10 or 11 minutes in, and then they took over, and about 6 minutes later, he came back online at 17:22, and he went offline at 17:05, right? So I don't remember it at all. And but I remember thinking, I got through that completely fucking unscathed. Well, I don't know, and you know, I don't really get very stressed very often. I don't get very anxious. I don't know whether or not it's good management or good genetics, or I just had a very easy life, but I remember, all good, you know, saw the crab in hospital. He was in a coma for a few days, all good, came out, and they're like, not sure about brain damage, blah, blah, blah. About 4 nights later, 3 a.m., ta-da! I'm like, oh, fuck. My body's like, here we go. Adrenaline, cortisol, heart rate, like everything started going nuts. I almost had, I didn't have a panic attack, But I just woke up and it was like my body went, all right, now's the time. And I just had this post-episode trauma. And about two or three nights, I didn't have great sleep. And the middle of the night, it was busy in my head. It was like there's like a bloke on a unicycle with a yellow woolly wig juggling 42 balls in my head for hours. And it's like when you're thinking about something, and by the way, how long do hours take in the middle of the night? Like 10 minutes is an hour when you're in a shit place.
Yeah.
And I had two or three nights of kind of, I wouldn't say trauma, mild trauma. And then it went. Any thoughts or any enlightenment for me around why we or some of us are very cool and calm in the moment, and then a day or two later, our body's like, nah, bitch, boom.
I think, you know, there's a book called The Body Keeps the Score. And I only know, you know, a thimbleful around trauma. But what I've learned is that trauma doesn't have to be, I guess when I would think about trauma, I would think about something horrendous, horrific, an atrocious experience that to me would cause trauma. Whereas it was actually one of my guests. She said that a situation can cause trauma for someone if it changes the way you viewed the world afterwards. And I thought that was a really interesting definition, because what might traumatize me might not traumatize the person beside me who witnessed the same situation or was a part of the same situation. And like what you were saying about when your mate was, I mean, I don't know, did you perform CPR?
Yeah.
You did. So you were... Had you had a lot of CPR and first aid training? I bet you had.
I had over the years because I owned gyms and worked in gyms. So,
yeah. So you just had a job to do, and so you were able to just focus and concentrate, and to in that moment, your brain knew that it's down to you if this guy's going to leave, and he's, you know, no matter whether it was a perfect stranger or a friend. I think, you know, it's not something that I know a lot about, but it's something that I've experienced, and like you, in a situation where there's high stakes and somebody needs to think clearly, despite the fact that I have an anxiety disorder, if you can focus on what needs to be done and get it done, but then eventually it does catch up with you. Mm. And in the same way that people have, you know, low levels of stress, and I don't know if you've heard of leisure sickness. It's this idea that, and you may not experience it because you and I work for ourselves and we lead very different working lives to a lot of people. But I know when I was teaching, I would go at it and grind away for the term, and the holidays would come and I'd come down with a virus. Mm. I'd fall apart. I'd be exhausted and have a sore throat and be sick. And there's a term for it, leisure sickness. And it's almost as if when you've got to be on, you're on. And when your brain knows, oh, there's time and space now for you to actually have a few days in bed or... But the physiology behind that's quite interesting. I'd love to know more about that too. But one of the things I know from an experience I had, and I'll share a little bit about it. It's very personal, but I wrote about it in Anxious Mums, my second book. I saw a massage therapist who was recommended to me, and he needed to work on my glutes, and I'd had lots of glute and back work done because I'd played so much netball. But let's just say he didn't drape me in the way that he was meant to and pulled my underwear down in a way that left me completely exposed. And I hope that that's not triggering for people who are listening. And if it is, I apologize. I guess it's something that at the time I froze. I think in the situation I was in, I was aware that this was wrong, that what was happening was wrong, but I froze. So instead of fighting or fleeing, I froze. And what was so fascinating, and I've leaving that appointment and that evening, I had tingling in my arms and hands, very noticeable somatic symptoms that I thought, what the hell has this person done? But I was sort of blanking out, blocking out that that particular experience from that event. And I was thinking, has the work that's been done on my back somehow caused a nerve issue that's giving me these symptoms in my arms? It went on for months and months, these symptoms. And I ended up going to the GP, and I ended up going to have nerve conduction tests, because my hands and my arms and sometimes my legs would have these tingling sensations that were so hard to describe, and we couldn't attribute it to anything. And over that time, I was becoming depressed as well. I was starting to become really sad and hopeless and teary. And I was doing my PhD at the time, and I wasn't seeing my therapist because I'd been so good and things had been going okay. And I would come and go in periods of my life when I needed him, and ended up ringing him and saying, look, I need to come back and see you. My mental health's taking a nosedive. And I remember pulled over on the side of the road in that initial phone call, and he said, do you have an idea of what might have led to this? And then he just prompted me. And I was able to say, oh my gosh, I think I do. And I was able to share with him what had happened. And then I went back to therapy and weekly therapy, and we worked through it, which is, I think, why I'm able to talk about it like I can now. And even though this person, there was no physical contact or anything, it was just that I felt in the most vulnerable of situations in this person's home. And it wasn't a clinic, it was a home office.
Mm.
And to the best of my knowledge, nobody else was around. So it was a very, very vulnerable situation that I found myself in. And I worked through it. And what my psychologist explained to me was that in the way the body keeps the score, that if the fight or flight symptoms or response is not seen through in a threatening situation, that it almost gets stuck. And so if we can't see that process through, and I was able to process it through talking with him, and he said, your body wanted to fight and punch and scratch and kick. And yet and it's so often for women who find themselves in these situations, as did I, I shouldn't say find themselves, end up in these situations, it's very common to freeze. And if you don't process that experience with the help of a professional who understands trauma, then it can get stuck, and you can have lots and lots of symptoms that are very real symptoms, but they're coming from a psychological experience. And so your experience days after that event was your body expressing everything that switched on in that moment that couldn't be expressed at that time because somebody's life depended on it. So it's fascinating. It's a fascinating area. I hope I haven't made you uncomfortable.
No, thank you for being so, I love stories like, well, I don't love what had's fucking terrible. I want to punch that bloke in the face. Like there's part of me that I don't like me. Part of me is like, this is fascinating. The body's amazing. Jody's amazing for sharing this. And the Buffet Alpha's like, who is that fucking guy? Like anyway, but thank you for being so brave. And you know, what I love about your story and I love about your vulnerability and your honesty is that, you know, you are this, you know, you're a renowned author, you've written amazing books, you've got this great show, you've got all this credibility. But, I mean, above and beyond all of that, you're just a person like me, like Melissa, like every, and I don't mean just in a belittling way, like we're all just humans doing stuff, you know, like ultimately you're Jody. Yeah, you're a doctor, you've got a PhD, you've done good stuff, cool, but you're still Jody, this human on this human journey of peaks and troughs and you know, good stuff and bad, you know. It is really interesting the way that we, in certain situations, like don't react when we would like to think that we would, or even why do you think that, not with that person, let's move on from that story for now, but why are we so worried about pleasing people, like being a people pleaser to people that we don't even know really? Like, and I'm not talking about being that we should be rude to people, but, you know, we say yes when we really want to say no, even when it's not in our own good sometimes, for our own good, because we just would rather say yes and go, oh, fuck, all right, than the potential discomfort that might come with giving someone a no. Is it just because we don't want to have to negotiate that something that could be emotionally or socially awkward.
Yeah, I think it's different. You know, placed in that situation now, I'd like to think I would respond very differently, being much older, having a first dan in karate might help.
Are you a black belt in karate now?
First dan. I'm one up from black belt.
Oh, dude, you're a weapon.
Wow. Yeah. I think I'd react differently. I think going back to the people pleasing and I think when we're put in a very difficult situation like I was, we don't know what we're going to do. I tend to fire up a bit more. And I know in another episode we talked about the dude down in Mornington who told me I couldn't park my car. And you said you thought I was Bambi, and I broke that mold a little bit that day. But when it comes to people pleasing and saying yes, I think that there is an innate need for us to belong. And it goes back in the same way that our fight or flight response stems back to living on the savannah and those people that were our ancestors who were able to recognize and avoid danger and be alert to it and fight or flee and stay safe, reproduced and eventually led to us. And so the people with, you know, one Dr. Chris McCurry says we are all descendants of the paranoid people, and kind of sums it up. When it comes to belonging, in the same way, if we are ostracized or kicked out of the tribe or excluded, you know, when we're excluded, the psychology, you know, it's the same, the parts of the brain light up when we're in physical pain. It's painful. We want to be a part of a group. We want to be on the inside of their circle, because not belonging to our primitive brain is life-threatening. But one of the things we need to build, and I'm working on this, and I'll tell you a funny story. I'm working on not caring what people think as much, because it's been something that's bothered me a lot. It bothers me a lot less now, but a friend has set me a challenge. So when I do the grocery shopping, I usually do Aldi and Woolies, and that's my, gosh, I mean, I still spend hundreds of dollars each week, but I'm trying to save it, you know, save a bit. And when I do the Aldi shopping, every 2 or 3 weeks, I buy a number of bottles of wine for someone else who shall remain nameless. And it's $2.99 white wine. And I often buy a dozen of these $3 bottles of wine.
Shout out to your alcoholic friend. That's a lot of wine every 2 weeks. Just saying.
It's a lot of wine. Sometimes if I buy a dozen, that'll last a few weeks. And this particular person mixes it with tonic and just has, it's a daily thing. But anyway, it's not important who it is. However, it is. So one of my own personal friends, one day I was chatting to her, we're having a phone conversation. I said, oh, I've got to go and buy this wine and go through the register. She said, my challenge to you is don't tell them it's for someone else.
Is that what you do? You go, it's not for me.
Oh, my gosh, yes. When I first bought it, I would put it aside and I would say, all right, now I need all this together so I can sort of sum this up, because somebody else pays me for this. Oh, yeah. Oh, there was no way I was gonna have anyone thinking I was buying multiple bottles of $3 white wine at Aldi. Anyway, my friend Tina gave me this challenge, personal challenge. She said, from now on, when you go, you are not allowed to disclose that this is not for you. And it is so uncomfortable. And I'm sure I'm getting a reputation.
That is so fun. You know what's funny is I get it because it's, but I don't even get that. Like I've never had alcohol, and I would go and buy 3 boxes and not even give a fuck what anyone thought. Like it wouldn't even occur to me that I should be embarrassed doing. Would you, Melissa? Would you think about that?
I probably would.
Really?
I'd probably do it same as Jody. Yeah, probably.
I wonder if that's a female-male thing, because when you said that, when you were telling the story, I'm like, where's she going with this? And then when you went that, I went, really?
Really? Oh, my gosh.
So you care what the checkout lady or man at Aldi thinks about your wine habits?
Well, And fellow customers as well. Oh. It's not just the chicken. Yep.
Oh, I'm going to buy you a hat that says I'm not really a piss pot and a t-shirt that says it's for someone else in brackets. No, really.
Particularly if it's like a close-knit community or a close-knit town. Like I totally get where you're coming from, Jodie.
Thank you.
I have an interesting – sorry, are you finished with that story?
Well, first of all, I am shocked and I will be so interested to know what listeners think because every time I do this, I am cringing on the inside and I've accepted the challenge and I don't say, but I swear people look at me and going, okay. So Mel, I'm appreciative of your input there. Go,
if
Craig.
You came through to my aisle. I'm on aisle 7 at Aldi every Wednesday to Friday between 8 a.m. and 2. But if you came through my register and you went to me, oh, it's not for me, I'd go, it's definitely for her. I'd go, it's definitely for her because who would point it out? Like, what? Hey, lady, don't know you, don't care. That's a conversation we didn't need to have. Thanks for the explanation that I didn't ask for. Go home, you weirdo, with your alcohol. That's what I would have thought. The other day, you were talking about your car parking extravaganza where you let that man have it. So the other day, Melissa, did I tell you this when I came out of?
I don't think so.
This is pretty funny. Well, the story won't be funny, but it was funny. I came out of the supermarket and I parked a little scooter, the ninga, 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 up on the footpath because you can. And I just come out with one bag of shopping. I put it under the seat. And as I'm at Hampton Street, you're not allowed to do a U-turn. And there was what turned out to be a lady that had at least 5 years on my mum, and my mum's 82, right? Mm. So this, God bless her, this lady was doing a 75-point U-turn on Hampton Street, cars everywhere. And anyway, she finally turned around to come back towards where I was. There was two car parks in front of me. She could have just driven straight in, put it in park, jumped out. So she drove in, God bless her, and drove in at the wrong angle and hit the curb.
Oh,
so she's now kind of 45 degree rather than parallel. So the arse of the car's out, the nose is pointing at the footpath. Then she goes back a bit and forward a bit. And I'm not kidding. She did this for 3 or 4 minutes, back and forwards, back and forwards. And I thought, and she was clearly, you know, like she was having trouble. And I'm thinking, like, I felt awkward for her. I didn't give a fuck about the traffic or I wasn't, you know, I just thought, how can I help? And I thought, I can't say to her, hey, do you want me to park it for you? Because I'm a stranger and I'm terrifying looking. And then anyway, I'm not kidding, after back and forwards, but hitting the gutter. And then she eventually ended kind of near the gutter, but she had half the car in one spot and half in the other spot. So literally she was straddling two spots in Hampton Street. You don't do that. So I kind of went to the window and I waved the, don't say I just did that to you too. Sorry, everyone. I just waved like you're all going to see me waving like a dickhead. And she ignored me. Like I'm literally at the window, face at the window of the passenger side. And then, so I tap on the window and she looks at me with absolute disdain. And I said, oh, you need to move back or forward. You kind of, and then she waved her hand in disgust, like the back of her hand, and essentially like told shoe. Me in old lady terms to, yeah, to shoo. To shoot. Yeah, I was going to say fuck off, but let's go with shoot. Right? Yeah, she told me to shoot. And then I think she thought I was actually trying to help her. And then so I went around the other side and I was trying to just say, just move a bit forward. I'll tell you how far. Anyway, she again, like, I don't know what she was saying because she wasn't speaking English, but she gave me a gobful. I'm all righty then, off I go. So she parked over two spots and walked in. And that's my story. But I sometimes helping people who don't want help is probably not a good idea. Back on topic, I wanted to ask you mentioned that you're a second dan or first dan black belt. So we get white belt. Tell me, is it white, yellow, green, blue, brown, black? What is it?
No. Well, at our dojo, it's white, red, yellow, orange, green, blue, purple, brown, 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 black, first dan.
Wow.
Wow.
When did you start karate?
I started 7 years ago.
Wow. Well, congrats on your first dan. Can you just tell us what you did to what what you had to do to get your first dan, like your grading? What did it entail?
It's interesting because the black belt grading was the hardest by far.
Tell us about that. Tell us about the black belt.
Grading was it's interesting. Once you've got the black belt, the dan gradings are much more technical, but less physical. So the black belt grading, you aside from however many classes that you do, and you on the day it's just punishing. Golly, I think we did. Over the course of the grading, maybe 300 sit-ups, 300 push-ups. There's these sort of basic kind of fitness boxes that you have to tick, lunges, lots of just get down and just go with the push-ups and sit-ups. And I can't even think. It was a little while ago now.
What about the fighting stuff?
Yeah. So that's the fitness side of things. You have kata. So kata are predetermined sequence of movements. So they're all fighting movements, but they move, you go in a particular sequence, and you need to not only you basically need to remember every kata that you've ever learned right up until when you do your black belt. You have two when you do your first dan, you have two more. So white belt, yellow, red, da 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 da, all have one, and then when you get to higher belts, you have two. So you have many kata that you need to perform at an exceptional level. And so that's technically with the right timing, et cetera, and that's all assessed. You fight, you spar, there's a two-on-one, and you're so exhausted that you can hardly keep your, you know, hands up in front of your face.
Two-on-one, you being the one?
You being the one. And, you have to get in the middle of them. You have to sort of split them. So you have to keep moving. So you're not allowed to go outside of the mats, and you need to put yourself in a position where you don't have two of them coming at you at once. And I've been on the other side of that, where I've been the one of the two with somebody, you know, going for their black belt, and you need to put pressure on. It's the idea is you get pushed in your black belt grading until you almost crack. But you're expected to be pushed to pure exhaustion and to a point where that you don't have really anything left in the tank. And all of that happens, and then you might be drawn on to do your kata, and then you're asked to explain the kata in Japanese, to explain how each movement in the kata corresponds to, and it's called bunkai, to a fight. And so when you do this particular move, this is actually how you would apply it if you were in a fight with someone. And this is what these terms mean. And it's a huge amount to remember, and you're performing at a very high level when you're absolutely exhausted. So when you get that belt, you know with every cell in your body that you bloody earned it.
Wow. Congratulations. That's amazing. But what's interesting too is for somebody who's dealt with navigated anxiety for her whole life, I bet when you're in the middle of that, you're not anxious, you're just present.
Yes. Yeah, you are. You concentrate, you get into flow, and you concentrate. The nerves are there before you start, and my anxiety affects my breathing a lot. And so when I'm anxious and I'm starting to get out of breath, then I really have to stop and take care of getting some really proper breaths in. But you eventually get into flow, and you're so well trained by that stage that you've kind of done the hard work up until that point, and you you have to be approved to go for your grading. And if your sensei approves you to go for the grading, then you've got that subtle confidence that, well, he wouldn't be putting me forward if he didn't think I was ready.
Mm.
Other things that I overlooked sharing were techniques in terms of punching and kicking, you know, hook kicks, spinning back kicks, and punching and front kicks, and just repetition after repetition against a bag with a partner, and self-defense as well. Mm. So a whole range of different techniques and attacks, and falls as well. Yeah, there's so much to it. But you do know by the time you go for it that's what you've been building to.
Mm.
And also, if you do make a mistake, that's okay. It's how do you handle that in that moment? Do you fall apart and lose the plot? Or do you go, I'm going to do that again, or I'm stopping and I'd like to start over? And yeah, so it's a real test. It's a mindset. It's a test of your mindset as much as it is of your learning, your memory, and your fitness.
Mm. So in the 7 years, obviously there's a huge physiological, practical skill development component. So you're getting stronger, you're getting fitter, you're improving balance and coordination and timing and power and speed and spatial awareness and all of these kind of sciencey things that we can measure and see and observe.
Mm.
Tell me about the benefits psychologically and emotionally from your karate journey.
So much confidence. So much confidence in all parts of my life. I think when you've been tested physically and psychologically in that way and you come through it, you feel really empowered. And I know now that you also learn in terms of looking after yourself, you learn a lot along the way. You learn that don't go running. If you go running and you're wearing headphones, just wear one. So you've got your wits about you. Mm. Look around, assess a situation, position yourself. If you do feel in a threatening situation, position yourself where you can avoid conflict at all costs. So it's interesting when you learn a martial art, you hope to never use it. That's really, you intend to never, ever have to use it and only use it when you need to protect your own safety or the safety of somebody else.
Mm.
And so I have my wits about me in ways that I never did before. I did so many years of self-defense. If I was to be grabbed by someone, I wonder if, and I would predict that in prior to learning a martial art, I would have really kind of crumbled and felt quite helpless.
Mm.
Whereas now I would react in a way that was feisty and forceful and would take somebody by surprise, I think, and I'd just be too much hard work to bother with.
Mm.
But I'd likely not get myself in a situation like that because I've learned what to do in terms of prevention.
Mm.
And I think too, just confidence in general to you know, when you've worked hard to achieve something like that, you do feel, I really did develop more. I mean, I've always been confident in myself, but I think I just stood a little bit taller, particularly after the grading. I felt so proud of myself for having gotten to that point and obviously continued. I think I just felt, really extraordinarily proud of myself because it was really, really hard.
And I think, well done. I love that. I think also when you've been in a situation for 7 years when people are trying to kick you, punch you, you know, they're manhandling or woman handling, whatever the fucking correct term is these days, person handling you. you know, when people are grabbing you and you're in a volatile kind of violent-ish scenario, and you're used to being kicked and punched to a point and pushed and shoved, and you're used to kicking and punching and fighting and being combative, and you've gone from 1 out of 10 to 10 out of 10, and you've developed all this awareness and skill, and then one day someone pushes you or tries to grab you, it's not unfamiliar.
Mm.
Like it's just you on, like, I'm trained for this. This is me on autopilot. I've had this happen. I've had people, you know, albeit in training and in gradings, but still it is aggressive. It is confrontational and it is forceful and it is combative. And, you know, when you punch old mate in the face before he knows what's going on, then winner, winner, chicken dinner, boom, arms in the air, fuck off. Thanks for coming. You know,
you're tested in so many, you know, bear hugs from behind, you know, grabbing by the wrist and it becomes instinctive. And our son was doing karate there for a long time and we'd play around a little bit at home but the taller and the older he got, the feistier it got, it was just getting out of hand.
Oh, really?
So he opted to sort of wind that back a little bit at home, but yeah, I need to actually put on my gloves and my sparring gear, I think, in the end with him.
Hey, before we go, I've got a couple of specific questions I wanted to ask you. Dr. Jodie Richards.
Oh, yes. Yes, sorry. Were you waiting for a response?
No. From the, hello, anxiety pod. Well, hello, anxiety, you old fucker. I see you there just fucking looming up on me, you little cerebral fucking ninja. I see what you're doing. Fuck off.
All right. Love that name, don't you?
Oh, I love it. I love it. I wish I had thought of it. Even though I'm not Jodie, I would have made some shit up. Except I would have called it, well, fucking hello, anxiety. I feel like, and I'm just, this is anecdotal and observational and empirical. Do you like that? I feel like, Doc, that some people, I say some, not all, as they get older, some people go from never having really been anxious overly to being quite anxious in their older years. And anyone who listens to this who knows my mum, please don't say this to my mum, because I love my mum, but sometimes I see her getting really quite anxious and worried about shit that she never would have even thought about in the past. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's, you know, because, I don't know, I think it's a multitude of things, but does that happen or is that just my observation?
It's interesting. Sometimes I know that my anxiety can creep in when I've got a bit more space in my life and I'm not so focused on work or whatever it is that I'm doing. When there's a little bit more space in your life, sometimes you can, and it depends on what's happening as well. It's hard to know, but you can, particularly in the times that we've had where there has been a threat and people's nervous systems have been switched on constantly and continuously, that it can cause people to, a lot more people are struggling with anxiety now than ever did. When you are busy with your life, you know, I've got kids and work and sport and extracurricular activities and parents that need help. And, you know, when you're doing, as you know, most of us are busy, busy, busy at this stage in our lives, sometimes you just don't have time to dwell on the things that might cause an anxious reaction. When you spend some time thinking about it, we can let things go. It's just like, that's just way down my priority list. So I don't have time to even worry about that. Whereas when there's a bit more time, a little bit less in the day, you're not got so much to take your mind off things. Sometimes it can be when you focus and you start to think about it and dissect it, it can sometimes work that way for people. But just in general, across children and adolescents, you know, there was one study that globally said there's been a doubling in anxiety and depression. And yeah, there is a lot more anxiety around. But we also know that half of all mental illness comes on by the age of 14 and 75% by the age of 24. So most people who are going to struggle quite young, and then it just goes with them through their life unless something sort of triggers it, you know, later in life.
Yeah, well, maybe that explains the, you know, the middle of the night ruminating, because you're not busy doing anything. My mind's not focused on a task or a job, or it's just me and my mind in the silence and the darkness and the void. It's a fucking void in there. It's like sometimes I yell and it just echoes for minutes in there. But it is, it's like, maybe that's part of it too, is when we're not focused on something or doing something, and like it or not, we're stuck with the stillness and the silence and just what is happening in our mind. Maybe that's what elevates it. Maybe that's why 2 to 3 o'clock, I don't know what it is about 2 and 3 o'clock, but they seem to be my key times.
Oh, you and most of the world, I think it's really common that insomnia that comes with stress and anxiety is it's a huge problem. And the less we sleep, the more likely we are to feel anxious. So it's a really hard one.
So everyone, it's all doom and gloom. You heard it from Dr. Jody. We've got nothing to look forward to. We're all fucked. No, not true at all. It's all good. It's all love and light and Jesus and unicorns. Come on, high five, team. Dr. Jody Richardson.
It would be.
Go on.
Oh, I was going to say, it would be remiss of me not to say that episode 8 of Well Hello Anxiety is about the antidote to worry. So, Craig, tune in. And hopefully there's something in there that, and it's a lot about metacognition, which I know you and I are both big fans of. There's something in there for people who worry. And if you're waking up in the middle of the night, tune into episode 8 and have a listen.
Episode 8, well, hello, anxiety. you need me on your promo. Well, hello, anxiety. Like, hang on. Well, hello, anxiety. That noise was me opening the door.
Can I have that soundbite, please, Mel?
Sure.
I will do that promo. Yeah, I will do that promo for you. How do people find you? We know the name of your podcast. What's your web address? Is it just Dr. Jody Richardson?
.com. Yeah, Jody with an I. Yep.
Jody with an I, Richardson.com. Numerous books. What's the latest book?
Anxious Kids was number one. Anxious Mums was number two. And funnily enough, I've just written down the title of what I think will be book three. I'm just letting it sort of, you know, settle in, and I'm just, I think I've landed on book number three. So it'll be, I think I'll hold on to that for now because I better talk to my publisher. I'm so passionate about mental health tools, and it'll be particularly supporting parents. I think it's going to be something along those lines. So, so that's kind of me. Instagram is where I love to hang out as well. So, I'm still speaking as well. Do you know, I'm driving to Warwick, Nabil. Have you ever been to Warwick, Nabil?
I don't think I have.
Yeah.
When are you doing that?
16th of December, going on a road trip.
Wow, dude. Well, good for you. Enjoy that. I've started to step back into the land of humans in rooms. And can I say, speaking of anxiety, this wasn't going to say this because I hadn't even thought of it, but and you thought the show was over, everyone. Oh, no, I'm still going. Fuck it. So I shouldn't say this, but okay, so this morning at 10 o'clock, I had a Zoom meeting, we'll just say with an organization, to talk about the upcoming presentation I'm doing for them. And I knew I had it. I just was not really thinking about it. So kind of forgot. So just incidentally, I was on the phone to someone at about 10 to 10. So the meeting was at 10. And then Melissa rang me around that time and I just pressed the reject button and said to her, I'm on the phone, I'll call you. And then at 10 o'clock, I call Melissa and she goes, oh, no, I'll talk to you later because I know you've got your meeting. And I go, what meeting? And she goes, you've got a Zoom meeting right now. I go, oh. And I was upstairs and I need to be downstairs for the Zoom meeting and my computer needs to be and fair to say, at the time, I was busting for a wee. Too much info? I don't care. I was busting for a wee. So I started the Zoom meeting at 10:02. And so to the good folk from you know who you are and where you're from. Now, I've just got to find what was his – there was a young guy. What was it? Was it Josh?
Yeah, it's Josh.
Yeah, Josh who organized it. Josh, shout out to you, my friend. I didn't forget. I just forgot it was then. So I broke all the land speed records getting down into this room, setting everything up, setting up the mic, turning on the 5G internet, finding the link. And at 10:02, 90 seconds after Melissa told me about it, I was on the call and I somehow didn't look like I'd forgotten. Sorry, everyone, just they're on. Yeah, no worries. And there's like a bunch of people sitting around a table in Whoop Whoop to talk to me, like a whole room of people. And I'm just stumbling in late like a pissed bloke at a party anyway. Dr. Jody Richardson is her name. Well, Hello Anxiety, episode 8 apparently is a fucking winner. Tune in. All those good books. Jody, thanks for coming on TYP. Love your guts.
Oh, thank you, guys. It's always so much fun.
you're really good today. You're really good every time. Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you. Thank you to both of you. Some great stories in there.
Yeah. Jody, the storyteller. Thanks, everyone. Love you, guts.